Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of the Drinks Noise podcast. Thanks so much for coming along and listening. I'm your host, Mike McGrail. A little bit of background on me before I get on with the interview. I am a digital marketer. I have been for a long time. I've worked in many different industries, but a real specialism and passion of mine has been spirits and whiskey marketing. And I currently work for White & Mackay on brands such as the Dalmore and Jura, driving a lot of our global strategy. I started this podcast because I wanted to bring together people who have a lot of great experience and knowledge to share all around the marketing of spirits and drinks. And that's what I've done. So I've got a series of fantastic interviews coming up. And this first one is with Duncan McRae from a whiskey blending house called Woven that I have so much admiration for. And I wanted to dig into how they've got to where they are now, the why behind the brand, and how they see the future forming, and of course, how marketing has played a part so far. That's enough for me from now. I'll catch up with you after. Enjoy the interview. Well, I'm delighted to welcome the first ever Drinks Noise guest, episode one. And it is a man from a whiskey brand that I have massive, massive respect for. Here he is. It's Duncan from Woven. Duncan, how are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you, Mike. What an honor to be your first guest. I'm very excited about this. And good to finally meet you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm totally delighted to have you on. And thanks for agreeing it, because I know that actually you are in Adelaide right now, and your local time is what?
It's a fairly social 20 to 8 in the morning, so it's not too bad, not too bad.
It could be a lot worse, so yeah, but thanks for making me your first stop for the day. So what I want to do in this episode is really dig into the Woven story, some lessons you've learned along the way, and let's face it, it's not been a particularly long journey so far, but huge learnings and ups and downs, I'm sure, in that time, and just chat a little bit about the future. But just so that all of the audience can make themselves aware of you and the business and the team, can you give us the potted history of Woven? You know, why you and the guys started it, and ultimately what your longer term vision is for the business.
Yes. We're quite new. We've only been trading for just over 15 months now. So it should actually be a short history, but there's a lot of long backtail stories of how we ended up coming together. So I will try and keep it super brief. But essentially, we're a whiskey blending house based in Leith right now. And we were, I suppose, friends that grew up in the drinks industry in Edinburgh, going back, sadly, about 20 years. We first connected in just the Edinburgh drinks scene. As you'll know, it's a lovely little community, lots of cross paths through the bars and restaurant scene. And we were sort of friends that came together through a shared love of whiskey, which doesn't sound unusual, but at the time it felt quite unusual, because most people were interested in all the exotic booze from the far-flung corners of the world that was finding its way onto the bars. But we were partial to a dram, and so we'd get together and talk about whiskey and share whiskey. It's almost sort of a clandestine pursuit. But we were a bit miffed at how there was no real connection between the on-trade where we were working and the Scotch whiskey community. They felt like two planets in different orbits. And we always thought that was weird, because it's on our doorstep. It should have been the stuff we were most passionate to recommend to people or play around with in drinks. But it just wasn't. And it was changing. You know, there were things like World Class Diageo's competition coming in and training us about the wonders of their portfolio. It was hard, I think, learning about whiskey at that time, because everyone that came in that wanted to train you was about vodka, gin, or rum. And that training was excellent, so it was great. So we knew there was magic to be had there. But we decided to do something about it. We hosted some sort of charity whiskey events called Whiskey Picnic that got the trade and the industry together. But they were one-offs, and it was all just having fun with whiskey, basically. And we had a lot of fun. But we always started talking about maybe there was something we could do in whiskey together. How could we take, you know, the community that we'd created in Whiskey Picnic and take it out? And these conversations just sort of kept happening over the years, but never really went everywhere. It was one of those conversations that you have almost every time you meet someone, but it never makes it past the second beer or something. Yeah, that was that. So, I should introduce who we're talking about. So it's myself, Pete Allison, Nick Ravenhall, and I'll come on to our other founders a wee bit later. But yeah, we were essentially passionate bartenders. And then as we aged and grew up, we all went off into the drinks industry to do different things. So Pete ended up working at Innocent Gun. I think he was employee number 4 or something at Innocent Gun. And that was an amazing journey for him that led him to the Edrington Group. And he went and worked for the Macallan out in Dubai for some years. And I think the bulk of his career he actually spent at Gonzalez Baez, the sherry producer. So a nice broad set of experience there, mainly in like brand development and sales. Nick Ravenhall joined Morrison Bowmore. And went out to the Nordics and ended up running a distributor out there before coming back to the UK to be the managing director of Atom Brands down in Kent. And myself, I joined Diageo and then sidestepped into William Grant & Sons. I actually got told I was too young to work in whiskey, so I went and worked in gin for the best part of a decade and came up through...
Hold on, sir. Let's just pause on that one there. How did they establish you were too young? At what age were you, if you don't mind me asking?
I think I was 23 or 24. I mean, to be fair, I'm Daryl, who we both know, he calls me the baby-faced assassin. So I was 23, 24, probably looked about 18, 19. But it was one of those things where I was the Scotch whiskey ambassador for the Scotch portfolio of Diageo in Scotland, you know. Dream job, all the places you can go to, yeah. You know, to do all the training and education. It was incredible. And at one of my reviews, and it was part of, you know, a sort of biannual reshuffle that was unfolding. They said, I think, to be honest, it made sense for them to put me into gin. And I suppose was young and naive. And I just, it was a terrible reason to be told that you're going to go and work in gin. But it really stuck with me. But anyway, so it was just, I was told I was basically, you know, maybe better suited to working in their gym portfolio, which I was potentially with my background. I had lots of on-trade experience, but my passion really lay in whiskey the whole time I was working in gin, even at William Grant's, where I became the global ambassador for Hendrix and then into the Hendrix global marketing team. You know, an amazing journey and loved it and learned lots about brands. But I always had, you know, my eyes were always wandering to the whiskey portfolio. And I realized that William Grant's, after so long working in Hendrix and, you know, shaping that brand and doing some incredible products, they weren't going to let me leave completely. So I kept on being given, I moved into the innovation department and was working on new projects and building brand new brands. But I always kept getting dragged back into the world of Hendrix through one way or another, which was incredible, and I'm very grateful for it. But I realized the only way to really leave Hendrix was to leave. And so I went and joined Nick at Atom, where I was the head of marketing. And, you know, Nick had they'd just been acquired by ABI InBev. And the remit was, you know, we're going to create a whole portfolio of new brands using, you know, the liquid pedigree that we've built up through Boutique. And Pete had joined as well. So I realized it was a friend-rich environment and could be a very exciting place to go. So I went and joined that team with Pete and Nick. And Pete ended up running the stakes. Nick was the MD, but we had lots of other friends across advocacy roles and sales roles, and it felt like, you know, a very enjoyable place to work. And that led us up to the pandemic. Things changed a little bit in the pandemic, just with, you know, every business. But for me personally, it was having a second child, literally as things were getting scary in London, that made me think maybe I wanted to leave London. And Pete had a business trip sort of cancelled because everyone was cancelling meetings. And he turned up with a business plan and said, this thing that we've talked about for so long, we should maybe think about doing it now. And, you know, I had two kids at home I won't let my wife hear me saying this, but we had a little bit of time to think about stuff. And so we thought, if not now, then when? So Pete and myself and Nick worked for a year sort of full time on getting the idea fleshed out of Woven. And we knew we wanted to go into blending just because, you know, craft distilling has boomed and blossomed in Scotland. And we actually felt the white space had already been filled in the new distillery space. Of course, we love distilling. We'd love everything. Everyone in whiskey would love to have their own distillery. But we were, you know, when we talked about what we were doing, it was essentially exactly what some of the other people already at the table were doing. And obviously the capital that you need to do a distillery is absolutely massive. And we thought, well, no one has gone near blending. And it was just around the time that 20 years were being celebrated of Compass Box and John Glazer's journey. And he was doing lots of outreach and podcasts and PR. And we were reading it being like, you know what? It's true. They are still the new kids on the block in terms of blending. And, you know, what an amazing journey they've had over the 20 years. And now they're very much established or part of the establishment. You know, we thought there's definitely more work to be done in that area of the industry that is getting so little love. And the fact that after 20 years, someone's still being described as like the new kids on the block, that, you know, that says something to us at a sort of brand level that there's an opportunity there. So as soon as we had the thought, we dusted off a presentation that was actually about 12 years old of a Leith blend. And obviously we had evolved and changed, and we read it sort of half cringing on every other slide, but there was actually a lot of good thinking in there that we, you know, revisited and talked about for a few months, and that grew into Woven. So what we are is essentially a whiskey blending house out of Leith that takes blending can get very complicated very quickly. So we just decided to try and make it as simple as possible. And that's essentially make the best blends that we can, purely driven by flavor, try and be as open and transparent as we can, as welcoming to the category as we can, and really challenge lots of the current status quo in terms of what blends are and how they're put together and why they're put together that way, just to make stuff that essentially the word that it always boils down to for us is totally yummy. Because for us, that's what whiskey is about. It's about moments where you taste something and go, wow, that's amazing, or that's yummy. And it's like a slightly childish word to describe whiskey when you've got pages of eloquent tasting notes to choose from. But for us, it's like, let's not overthink it. Let's just make yummy whiskey. And if we do that, then hopefully people will like it and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks for that. And I think the simplicity part of it is so, so vital, because we all just want something that's delicious, and we don't necessarily have to be describing why it's delicious in hugely convoluted ways. And your product is genuinely yummy. I got a bottle of Experience Number 3, and it's genuinely one of the most initially surprising whiskies I've ever tasted. And, you know, you do it in a lot of your outward communications. You talk about an experience, and They are. Everything you've produced so far is an experience, and I think that's just set you off in such a great way. I mean, that you mentioned it there, Duncan, but perhaps people who maybe think they know a lot about whiskey, without wanting to insult anybody, but maybe don't know so much. There's always been this thing where a blend makes people kind of a certain type turn their nose up. How's it been trying to kind of turn the tide on that, or have you actually not really come up against it?
So that is one of the insights, I suppose, that formed. You know, it was we had pages of it in our sort of design brief. We were trying to give the people we were working with like a real deep understanding of how we saw the whiskey industry. And as I said, we were really lucky because we were bartenders, and bartenders, you realize very early in your bartending career that you should just sit back and listen when people talk about spirits, because they probably know more than you. You know, all these brand ambassadors coming in, etc. You know, they get the best training. And so we realized quite early on that there was more to blending than what we had been told over the bar from customers, or, you know, self-discovery. And actually, I think one of the things that stuck in my mind was going to Whiskey Live down in London, you know, big trip to London, meet all your whiskey heroes. And, you know, we were as malt obsessed as anyone else at the time. But I sat through a tasting where Dave Broom did a vertical tasting of single malt whiskies. But into that tasting, he had slipped a Johnnie Walker Black Label. And there was this room full of, you know, probably the geekiest people in whiskey on the planet at the time, waxing lyrical about the merits of this unknown liquid. And then he, you know, pulled the cloth off over the top of the bottle, and it was a blend, and people, you know, some were laughing, some were embarrassed. It was, you know, it was this real eye-opening moment that actually, for me anyway, that, wow, what a great trick, you know, that's magic. And of course, when you revisit it, you're like, yep, that I totally understand it. So yeah, long story short, we were lucky to have that sort of openness to blends right from the off. And obviously, as people mixing drinks, where the whole raison d'etre of the cocktail scene is taking something and mixing it to make something that is better or different or has elements of this and elements of that, you know, it didn't feel like anything was wrong with blends. So when you actually start unpicking why is the perception of blends in such a bad place within the whiskey community, it comes down to this, what they know and what's being done to the blends. So, you know, I think it is fairly safe to say that since the dawn of almost supermarket listing whiskey, the journey that blending has been on, and probably long before this, but I think it was probably accelerated, you know, it's become a price-driven category. It's become about, you know, it's almost the capitalist ideal of, you know, a commodity at the largest volume at the lowest price, you know, and it's become about momentum. And there's not a huge amount of brand loyalty. It's very price driven. And as a result, it's bred perhaps the wrong, and I put these in inverted commas, behaviors by whiskey makers in terms of their price promotion, their formulations, you know, their approach to liquid. I think those decisions were being made either through necessity or practicality, not necessarily with the best interest of consumers in mind. Unless the argument stands that, well, the consumer wants the cheapest whiskey possible. So, you know, in some ways, it's totally understandable where blends ended up. But did blending deserve to end up there? Absolutely not, because you know, whiskey quality at a sort of DNA level has never been higher. There's more understood about the process. Grain whiskey, you know, the quality of grain whiskeys being produced has been going up and up through the generations. Yeah, we felt that blending needed a bit of a reset. the perception is understandable because people have got now so much knowledge, and some of it is assumed knowledge. Some of it is Chinese whispers where, you know, there's a sort of middle ground of knowledge where you feel very knowledgeable, but it, once you've worked in the industry for 10 years, you realize that lots of those things are sort of oxymorons or turns of phrase or just assumptions that get trotted out at every whiskey tasting, and then people accept them as knowledge but never challenge them or interrogate them. And that's all fine. You know, that is the journey of being a whiskey enthusiast. And we, you know, we love the whiskey community. It's where we grew up. It's where we spend a lot of our time. But going back to our sort of why, we were always as excited about the experience of being a whiskey enthusiast, and the enjoyment we got from that. For us, we didn't want to create a whiskey brand that was just for geeks and freaks and just all about the liquid story. We wanted to create a brand that touched some other areas or had the ability to touch other areas, whether it be design, bartending, you know, drinks. You know, it was always going to be a whiskey that sort of started in the whiskey community but seeped into all these other areas, because for us that was the most exciting bit of the whiskey industry. It was the places it took us, the people it connected us to, the drinks we got to experience, the bars we got to hang out in, and all of that was, excuse the pun, like woven together for us as our experience of the whiskey industry. So we're as geeky as the next person, but we sense check ourselves quite a lot to make sure that we're not putting up barriers or pulling the rope ladder up to make it harder for people to get into. We want to make it as easy as possible for more people to get into. And by default, that means that for some of the whiskey community, we might not be for them, because they like the sort of exclusiveness of some of these brands in terms of, you know, something like Lagavulin, you know, has or Kolila, maybe a better example, but it's got a sort of cult status as a slightly underground avant-garde, you know, not everyone knows about it or not everyone will like it, not everyone can know about it. But we're probably the opposite. Like, we want to share our love of the whiskey community as broadly as possible.
Hi listener, sorry to interrupt the show, but I just wanted to prompt you and say that episode 2 of the Drinks Noise podcast is already live. So please do, once you're finished this show, of course, go and listen to it. It's an interview with on-trade marketing expert Chris McPhail. So much to learn from this man, and it's delivered in a straight-up, no-nonsense way.
Yeah. No, it's a great story, and I love the why, and I think you have managed to create something that's... It clearly comes from a place of knowledge and experience, but is massively accessible, and... Something I want to touch on later is, you know, who is drinking Woven, but I wanted to look back a little bit in terms of, so you and the guys had decided that you were going to go for this and you're going to make it about the art of blending. I mean, something that massively stands out to me and something that, in all honesty, drew me to the brand immediately is the packaging design. So, I mean, how did you go about deciding at a higher level how you wanted the brand to look and the packaging to look, and then how did you make that a reality? It's always a huge challenge, isn't it?
It goes back to this word experience again. So a lot of what I just went on about was put down in paper and sort of became a bit of a design brief, and we were introduced through a mutual friend who you'll know, Rapscallion Soda, Gregor and his partner Sophie in Glasgow, that are producing these beautiful artisanal healthier sodas. One of our friends was mentoring him or just having some conversations and had said, well, he's had great success working with this Glasgow-based design agency, Freitag Anderson, you should speak to them. And I should say, at this point, it was myself, Pete and Nick, and Pete's childhood friend, Ed Harvey Jameson, who we realized that, like a blend, we were missing something, or like a blend that's a work in progress. We were definitely missing the sort of finance business management element. Nick is, I think, the world's greatest sort of salesman. Pete was very much the glue. We very quickly put him into a sort of managing director role because he could diffuse all the debates and you know, get stuff done and keep his eyes on the prize in terms of what our objectives were. I was the sort of marketing end of the spectrum, and we felt that we needed someone to round us out with a sort of business management experience. So Pete had this amazing childhood friend who had a great experience in this area. So Ed was involved as well. And we'd each put in, you know, a little bit of money. So we knew we couldn't go to a design agency that was going to cost us, you know, the big bucks that I had experience of pouring into design agencies in either my innovation role or at Atom. We did it all in-house. But, you know, Atom was an amazing schooling because they take an insight from Master of Malt and they will design an idea around that to meet that need in a week, and they'll do the liquid in 2 weeks, and they will go from ideation to having a minimum viable product live on their website in, you know, a 4 to 6 week period. It's an incredibly nimble and agile and scrappy, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but that's how they do innovation. And then if the idea works, they'll put someone else on it to work on it. They'll iterate, they'll improve, they'll optimize. And then, you know, that's how Bathtub Gin was created. It's how lots of the boutique gins came to fruition. They've got a whole string of products coming out of what's now called Atom Labs that follow that process.
It's very much based on a sort of tech startup model, isn't it? In a lean startup model where you try something out and you learn and you iterate, and it's fascinating to hear about that being in existence in this game, you know.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I come from William Grant & Sons, which, you know, are getting better at innovation now, but they almost did the entirely opposite. It was like, you know, you finish the concept, you produce a bottle mold, you have a 2-year run up to launching this product, and then almost by definition it's too big to fail, and so it gets just shoved into the machine, because, you know, so it's I think big FMCGs, you know, all of them have a long list of expensive failures, and for every Hendrix that is produced, there's probably 9 that don't quite make that cut. Actually, William Grant's are very good at innovation too, but they do it the opposite way to Atom. So yeah, I had these sort of twin axes of how to make a brand. And I suppose with Woven, we didn't have the luxury of doing the first, so we're probably going to do the latter. That being said, we didn't want it to be a full MVP. We wanted to create a system that we could build on. You know, we weren't aiming at consistency for our first products. Everything we were going to do was a limited edition. And all the stuff that I talked about, we poured into this design brief and we gave it to Freitag Anderson. And it's an amazing synergy that we struck off very quickly, just shooting the breeze with them. They hadn't really done a lot in whiskey. They were mad passionate about the whiskey scene. They felt lots of the tensions that we were explaining in our brief. They very much represent the sort of modern Scotland creativity design community that I think has lots of the same things. You know, if you think, you know, if you were to ask an AI design platform to design something from Scotland, it would come out with tartan, you know, someone in a kilt. This, and I think there's actually loads of industries in Scotland that are suffering from being a bit typecast by the stereotypical perception of Scotland. So there was, yeah, and I think there was a lot of stuff that we were saying that they could relate to from like a whiskey design perspective. So immediately, you know, we were showing them, you know, I think all the examples of references from other brands were coming from the New World whiskey movement, you know, or natural wine, or, you know, they were cross-category references. We weren't really referencing anything from Scotland. And they got the bit between their teeth. And to be fair to them and to our benefit, they just got really passionate about the project and they massively over-delivered. And they gave us like this absolute gift of a brand, both in name, and it spoke to our journey as founders, but also our journey of the industry, but also of blending. But then the packaging experience. And we had talked a lot about experience of whiskey being broader than just the liquid. And actually, Daniel was the guy who, or Daniel and Greg were the guys who took this word experience and made it the actual anchor of the brand. So, and what this does was, his insight was, if you don't tell people what's in it, and we were like, no, we need to be transparent. He was like, hear me out. He was like, your biggest barrier is the three words blended Scotch whiskey. That is going to mean that a large part of your audience are just going to completely step past you because they don't drink blends, or they don't like blends, or they're not comfortable with what a blend is. And he says, if you make it tactile, make it something you want to hold and touch, and ultimately there's no information there, so the first thing you have to do to assess it isn't read some words from someone like me and decide whether or not it gets past your sort of mental gatekeeper. It's like, if you can get them to taste it and what you tell us about your liquid philosophy is true, then the chances are, like, taste is your best opportunity to win them round to the idea of blending. And it was that very simple insight, and I've articulated it terribly, but that led us to this phrase, experience whiskey, where actually, if you just put it in a glass and taste it, and then let's have a conversation about what's in it, or why it might be good or bad, or, you know, how old it is. And there's all these things that lead to someone drawing a conclusion about a whiskey before the tasting experience that almost sets in motion a foregone conclusion. And that's true in single malt and true in all whiskey. And it comes from this place of knowledge. So we thought, well, that's actually really interesting. If we can just double down on the experience. And so we started calling all our limited editions experiences. And obviously that speaks to the intensity of an experience or the journey of each blend or the sort of journey that each blend takes you on. But it also, for us, is like, we could tell you, it's almost sad in a way that if we said, this is packed full of Kolila, Kleinleash, and there's some, and this is completely hypothetical, but there's some Dornich in there, people would be like, oh my gosh, I have to try this because I know this is going to be incredible. But if we told you it's, I'm trying to think of, I don't want to name distilleries because I'll offend them, but let's say, just if we told you it was a group of less sexy distilleries right now, people would be way less excited. And that does a disservice to the art of blending. So we felt by adding a sort of layer of discovery where you can definitely work out in each of our blends exactly what it is. We go to great lengths on our website to give the breakdown of the blend. And then we have a behind the blend section, which allows you to sort of decode the components, and we give as much transparency as we can within the rules of Scotch whiskey. We've created this sort of separation between the experience of drinking it, where we just want people to taste it with an open mind, and then there's the experience of enjoying whiskey and geeking out and understanding it at a liquid level. And we try and offer that as well, but we want them to be delivered separately rather than both at the same time. And that sort of duality of experience was what defined the aesthetic, the language, the sort of brand narrative that comes with every liquid.
With marketing as the center point of this podcast, I mean, so you're a year in, there or thereabouts. What's been the thing that's worked best for you?
We've been very lucky, mainly through timing, but also just we have, you know, we knew that if we were to be taken seriously by anyone over a length of time, there was a place that we had to win, first of all. And in old school marketing terms, it's about, you know, identifying your tribe. Or I suppose it's the old school definition of influencer. You know, who are the people that are going to set the tone of, you know, if someone looks at a bottle of Woven in a pub and they go, oh, is that any good? You know, who are the people that we need to have our back to get us over that threshold of being accepted into the industry? Because I think we've all seen brands launch in the industry that maybe don't feel like they're from the industry, or, you know, they're instantly not taken seriously as a brand because, I don't know, for a reason. So we knew that our first order of business was to basically almost exclusively speak to the whiskey community, the gatekeepers, the opinion leaders, and, you know, patience, I suppose, was the order of the day. We didn't have a lot of liquid to go around because we were self-funded at this point. And, you know, our batch sizes were minuscule. So we wanted to get it into the hands of the right people. So we launched, our only launch activity was sending out some small samples to about 100 people who were either people we'd worked with, mentors, people we'd crossed paths with at various stages through our careers, some bona fide, you know, whiskey influencers of the old sort and the new sort. And that was it. And, you know, there was no expectation on anything, but it was just to include them so they didn't find out about us third hand, you know, that they felt part of our launch, I suppose. And that was really important for us. We went very narrow with our outreach. From a marketing perspective, we wanted to keep it really simple. We wanted to keep it very narrow. We wanted to basically speak to one group of people. And that's been fine. It's hard work doing any marketing, especially with very little money. But, you know, we were really lucky that we had some good feedback early on from people that certainly we respected and we knew were respected in the community. We went to the effort of really trying to explain our why to a handful of people who we knew would understand it. And I, you know, every time we say the word Woven, in many ways, it's a theme that kept on coming up again. We'd either had this conversation with someone, or someone had been part of something that we'd done before. Or we'd read something that had inspired us. And, you know, we make no secret of the fact that we were hugely inspired as aspiring whiskey professionals by the work of Dave Broom and the way that he described Japanese whiskey and is now doing in Scotch whiskey with a sense of place. And, you know, these aren't new ideas. He's been talking about them for the best part of 20 plus years. But it was really nice to actually send Dave a bottle and say, you know, this might be a bit fanboy, but we don't think we'd be here. And I cited that Johnny Walker example I mentioned earlier, you know, had it not been for people like you. And, you know, and now when we go to the whiskey show, you know, Dave Broom turns up at our stand with, you know, about 15 people over the course of the weekend to say, you must come and try what these guys are doing, you know. And that's been amazing for us. So I think the marketing lessons out of this are go slow, build your tribe, and long term, you know, the whiskey community is not the only community that we want to speak to. But we, our whole first year, partly through necessity, we didn't have much money, we didn't have big budgets to go to a big PR company. It was all about word of mouth with a small group of people that we now would call like our foundation, or the people who we know will have our back as we grow, hopefully, if we keep doing interesting things.
Duncan, that's been so interesting, and I could talk to you all day about this, but I know you're a very, very busy man. I love that part there, but you know, you've started with
a community around you. And that is something that for maturer brands is almost aspirational. They spend a lot of time and money trying to create that, but getting in there at the beginning and using all those, the knowledge that you've got of the industry and ultimately the friends and the network you've built up to help you propel is fantastic. Let's finish up on the future for Woven. I mean, it's early days, but where do you want it to go? What's the ultimate aim?
We're about to launch our first continuous liquid, or our first blend that we can produce again. So that's very exciting for us, because everything we've done has been a limited edition through necessity. We were able to do that because we took some investment and an additional investor earlier in the year. And that has been really good for us, because now we can source more whiskey. We don't have to sell half of it before we can order the next batch, etc. We were really hand to mouth for the first year. And that's been frustrating to the on-trade, for anyone that basically has wanted to stock us, because you know, they order some bottles of this limited edition and they go to reorder and it's gone. So we look forward to that changing. We're still in 50cl, but we're going to have a bottle project start immediately. What we're hoping to do is basically expand our footprint. We've just partnered with Bay Spirits in Scotland, our distributor. So, you know, for the first time, we've actually got someone going door to door talking about Woven on our behalf. Obviously I came out here with the view to looking at our sort of long-term business model of blending in other whiskey making countries. But it's meant that there's one less person in Edinburgh. So Pete's been, you know, doing a lot of, or everything basically, in terms of wearing all the hats all the time, and that's been really hard. So I think we need someone on the ground to go out and go door to door, and Woven's a brand that people read about or hear about. But yeah, our big aspirations are just, you know, doing the right thing in terms of going around, speaking to people in the trade, educating about the category. You know, this is going to be a slow burn. We don't expect people to suddenly flock back to blends overnight. It's going to be, you know, chipping away at the coalface for years to come to get people interested in blends to the level that we will need them to be to sort of sustain the business. So lots of training, lots of bartender seminars, you know, it's boots on the ground really. But that will be fueled by our first continuous liquid. And that means that we can actually start telling our story consistently, because we're not always having to introduce a new concept or a new liquid. We're going to keep doing the limited editions as well. So we have this sort of dual prong approach, where it's you know, business by day, the liquid that can go everywhere, super versatile, super yummy. And then our limited editions actually become limited editions that you know, go to not to everywhere, maybe slightly harder to find for some, but yeah, that's going to be good for us. And that was always the plan. We just weren't able to do it because all we could do was limited editions. Whereas now we've got the supply in place to hopefully scale up in a slightly more meaningful way. And then blending across borders, that's, I suppose, the big headline. You know, we very early on sourced some whiskey that wasn't Scotch, because we love loads of whiskeys that aren't Scotch. It's been an absolute nightmare to try and get it into a bottle and to even get it all stored in a place where we can blend it. So we're actually bottling that down in England this week, and that will launch really soon. So we're really excited about that because it takes us beyond just the Scotch category, which weirdly frees us slightly, because as soon as you start talking about non-Scotch, people don't seem to have the same barriers they do to blending. Look at Nika from the Barrel, for example. You know, A, it's not Scottish, it's not Japanese either, but you know, as a world whiskey that people judge in terms of flavor first and experience, you know, it's a huge source of inspiration to us. And we think that producing something of that ilk, that that people approach with an open mind because they're either more comfortable with what it is, or it doesn't fit within the words blended Scotch, which people have a lot of baggage with. That's going to be really interesting to see if that has the desired effect for us. So yeah, that's a big project now. And from that, we will, you know, try and, a big thing for me is becoming, you know, doing Woven full time as a job now rather than a side hustle. And that is going to allow us to do a whole load of stuff in terms of digital, videos, content. You know, we have done the bare bones to date, which, you know, we've got a journal on our website that we really want to be like a source of inspiration, but at the moment it's updated monthly, not weekly. And, you know, you'll know yourself that this stuff is the engine room, and it's about consistently doing it regardless of the results. And yeah, we just haven't done half of that stuff as well as we would have liked to. So yeah, that's hopefully set to change as of now. And yeah, we look forward to building that community sort of beyond just the world of whiskey, which is our main objective for the year.
Superb. It's lovely to hear those ambitions, and I'm sure you'll absolutely match them. No, thanks so much, Duncan. It's been really great to speak to you, and a very, very interesting first episode of Drinks Noise for the listeners, I'm sure. Where can people go to find out more about Woven and connect with the brands and even potentially your people, in case anybody wants to drop you a wee line of appreciation?
Yeah, we're just, I mean, Instagram is a great portal, or LinkedIn for us as individuals. But yeah, just at Woven Whiskey on Instagram, and all roads lead to my mobile phone. So if anyone wants intro to Pete because they're stopping by Leith or whatever, then yeah, just reach out and we'll join the dots. Yeah, it's quite nice working for a tiny brand where, you know, it's actually the people at the end of all the communication platforms rather than agencies.
Yeah, it's great to get that connection. Thanks so much, Duncan. And yeah, all the best for the future.
Excellent. Thanks, mate.
Thanks so much again to Duncan for taking the time to chat to me. I'm sure you'll agree that was full of great insight and things to go and think about. It feels great to finally have the show out there, and it's now available on all of the key podcast networks for you to go and subscribe to. If you've enjoyed the show, please do leave a review on those platforms. It really helps get it out there to more people. But at the very least, please tell a friend in the industry who may also enjoy it. There are a few ways to keep up to date with the Drinks Noise podcast. Number one, sign up for the newsletter at drinksnoise.com, and I'll email you every time a new episode drops, and there'll also be some show notes and extra bits of insight included in each newsletter edition. Number two, of course, subscribe on your favourite podcast network. Number three, follow the Instagram account, which is simply drinksnoise. Please do reach out. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the show, any feedback, and anything you think I could improve on, but also guest nominations, because I'm sure you know loads of smart marketers in this space that I also don't know. Thanks for listening. Hope to speak to you soon. Lots of love, Mike.